Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Buddhist Center podcast with me, Chandradasa. I'm delighted to be back after a wee break. And I'm very happy not to be on my own this week on the team. I have my good friend and colleague, Kusala Devi, joining us. Hi, Kusala Devi.
Hi, Chandradasa and everyone who's listening. It's great to be back, actually. I've not been on a podcast recording for quite some time. And I was just thinking, I particularly enjoy that thing of just hearing what's alive in people's practice, which is, I'm sure, what we're going to hear about today. So Good to be back.
And this week's theme is imagination. Now, Kusala Devi, we did a podcast on imagination a year ago with some of today's lovely guests, or one of today's lovely guests. Were you also on that recording? I think you might have been.
I was, yeah. That was with Vishvapani and Vidyamala for their last home retreat.
Yes. Yeah. So here we are again, a year later, and we're doing another retreat. That was so successful, we're doing another one on imagination. And it is indeed with Vishvapani. And this year, we've got a different person to come and evoke a new path to creativity with us, who's Amitajyoti, who you'll meet in a minute. But Amitajyoti and Vishvapani are going to be doing a home retreat with us in September. It runs from the 13th to the 19th of September. And you can get all the details in the show notes. We'll have links and all the usual things to book on that retreat. And their retreat is called The Heart of Imagination. The sort of subtitle for it is Connecting to Creativity and the Imagination Through Art, Mindfulness and Nature. All of which make me want to attend. And I think Kusala Devi is going to be there for some of it too. So we're going to open up this whole area of imagination. We're going to explore what this retreat will be about, but in a way more what the practice behind it is about and why we think it's a great idea to join us and explore imagination together. But first, let's meet our guests. So Amitajyoti, welcome. You're new to the podcast for the first time.
Thank you very much, Chandradasa. It's lovely to be here.
And where are you?
I'm based in London. I'm in London at the moment, near Epping Forest. I'm a practicing artist. I've been a practicing artist most of my life. And I also teach drawing and painting. So probably the main area that I teach is drawing, painting with meditation or mindfulness practice. So I do that in a variety of different places. I teach adults in person, online, and sometimes work in galleries and other institutions. So yeah, it's something I very much love to do.
We're going to hear more about the drawing and painting in a bit, I think. And welcome back, Vishvapani. You're now like basically a co-host on this podcast.
Well,
it's nice to have you.
I'm happy to be back. Yes.
Lovely to see you with all your nice books behind you on screen. Listener, you can't see this, but we can see this. Do you want to remind folks where they are if they haven't met you before?
Okay. I live in Cardiff with my wife, Kamalgeet, and my son. And I am a mindfulness teacher. I spend a lot of my time writing, particularly at the moment. I'm writing a book about Sangharakshita, founder of Triratna. And I think my interest in imagination has really been evoked and encouraged by that process of writing about Sangharakshita. But it's always been there through my life.
I suspect we'll get into that too later on when we delve into this theme. So hey, if you're listening to this and you think, well, why would I want to attend a retreat on imagination when I'm a Buddhist? I hope we're going to answer your questions today. The retreat itself is going to be a whole week, so 7 days of practice, quite spacious, and it's arranged so that if you're in a different time zone or you've got a busy life, you could sort of dip in and out of it. So we'd encourage you to come to all of the sessions if you can, but we'll also be posting the video every day so you can catch up. And there'll be lots of resources for you to engage with online. So it's a home retreat because we want it to be as accessible as possible to everyone. And on this particular retreat, we'll be looking at mindful awareness through the whole of our lives, exploring how a sort of grounded and embodied practice can open a space for curiosity, basically, and open a space for connection with the imagination, with art, with nature. We will be exploring a variety of mindfulness practices. So we won't just be sitting around talking. We'll be reflecting and we'll be doing some creative discovery. And hopefully all of that will create a magical space. This is what happened last time around. In a way, you go in thinking, what's going to happen on this retreat? And by the end of it, everyone's sort of ecstatic with the space. It was a real space last time of just the sheer potential of the imagination to wake you up and make your life feel richer. And I've no doubt that's what's going to happen this time too. So maybe that's a good place to start, actually. For each of you, what drew you to this particular theme yourself? Presumably that's connected to your own practice of Buddhism. And why did you want to work with each other?
Well, I remember last year when this retreat under the same theme, mindfulness and the imagination, was advertised. And I contacted Vishwapani and Vidyamala, and I just asked if I could participate, you know, if I could be on the team. And they agreed. And I did that because, well, in a sense, my whole life really has been a contemplation, an exploration of these themes, these almost precisely these themes. I've explored it in my own practice. I've read a lot about it, just very, very inspired by it. I'm very interested in Vishwapani's approach. I find his mind really interesting. I've enjoyed our conversations. He's a great thinker. And I'm aware that the imagination, it's almost as though it's like grabbing him. And I'm really interested by that, the way that it's almost as though it's bursting into his life. It feels like he's in this process of discovery like we all are, but it's almost as though it's come to him. So I'm quite fascinated by that, really.
That's really great to hear. I'm glad you mentioned the thing about it being your whole life, actually. It was something I was thinking about when we invited you to do this retreat and to do the podcast today. One of my favourite poets is Elizabeth Bishop, and she's got this great line about being a believer in total immersion, which I love, like just being a believer in total immersion. And that strikes me, that is the path of an artist, right? You have to be all in. Vishwapani, you mentioned the book and the book you're writing about Sangharakshita too, and I heard you give a talk, I think it was sometime last year, about seeing Sangharakshita as a teacher, as someone who was just all in, his whole life was a creative endeavor to engage with the Dharma and figure out how, not just why it mattered to him personally, but how you could build a path for other people to practice. How does the imagination for you relate to the act of writing about a person? Because in a way, you're trying to be faithful to the reality of his life. How does it relate? And why does that make you want to do a retreat online with Amitajyoti as a painter and an artist?
Gosh, that's several questions, and they're all quite difficult. The last one actually isn't so difficult. Why do I want to do this with Amitajyoti? As Amitajyoti said, she volunteered to support Vidyamala and myself last year, and it was great working with her. And Vidyamala didn't want to do it this year. She wasn't available. She's very, very busy. So then I was thinking, well, who else could I work with? And Amitajyoti was, like you said, Chandradasa, she just lives this. And not only does she live a life of creativity, but she also is really devoted to helping other people enter into that same space. And creativity is quite general, isn't it? I'm sure there are lots of creative workshops you can go on. But as Buddhists, there's something really important about approaching that creative space through mindfulness and practices like that. And so I think Amitajyoti will really bring that dimension in, and she'll really offer ways for everyone to engage in, particularly, I think, drawing and artistic visual arts in a very accessible way that isn't about learning to draw, but it's about entering a creative space. So she's got those practical skills. I'm a bit more theoretical. But as she said, the imagination or something imaginal seems to have grabbed me. So you asked a question about how is it that writing about Sangharakshita has connected with the imagination. And I think it's because what I've really been trying to do is fathom who he was, how he experienced the world in his kind of inner secret life. And all of that gets expressed through his writings, but you've got to read them in a way that looks for all of that. And I think it's engaging with Sangharakshita as deeply as I can. What I've discovered is here's this great mind that's really driven by the imagination, that's finding different ways to reimagine Buddhism and to find in Dharma practices element that intimates some greater meaning. The way he puts it is that the imagination is the faculty that allows us to see that greater meaning in our concrete experience. So the two are brought together. I don't know if that answers your question, but like Amitajyoti said, it's grabbed me rather than being a theoretical construct. I can just explain.
It kind of answers my question. We're probably going to reframe this question throughout the whole conversation.
Yes.
Kusaladevi?
Yeah, so I was just thinking, you mentioned Sangharakshita and this book that you're writing, Vishwapani. So just to clarify, Sangharakshita is a founder of Tri Ratna, So that's the movement who we're all a part of. And I was just sort of intrigued really by you saying that the imagination underpins Sangharakshita's whole life and teachings. I'm aware that you'd also like to weave in the system of practice that underpins Triratna, which was developed by Sangharakshita. So I just wonder, perhaps we'll come to you again, Amita Jyoti, and I wonder if there's something you might like to say about the system of practice and how does that fit with the imagination and this theme?
Yeah, thanks, Kusala Devi. Well, I mean, it's had quite a long lineage, this particular formulation called the system of spiritual practice. It started off in 1978, where Sangharakshita gave a paper on the stages of meditation. And it's developed, and more recently, Dharmachari Prakasha gave a set of teachings on the mandala of awakening, which unpacks it even more. The imagination is very much part of this system of practice. And I think one of the important things that Vishwapani and I really want to draw out in the retreat, although it sounds quite systematic, perhaps not very attractive to some of us, it's a very organic process. What it describes, it's like a map of how the mind naturally unfolds when we become more aware, more awake through dedicated practice. So it's a series of stages that can just really help us to navigate our way and build more confidence as to where we are in each stage, to recognize our experience, what's unfolding in our experience in the context of these stages. And the imagination is stage four of that, which is something that does naturally arise. So it's not like we have to worry about whether or not we've got an imagination. It is the case that we all have one, and given the right conditions, it just naturally unfolds.
Yeah, because I think sometimes even that term, the imagination, can feel a bit daunting or a bit like, oh, what's going to be the way in? But certainly my experience of the system of practice has been, as you say, I think we'll go on to talk a bit about the stages in a minute, but it's sort of very naturally unfolding and very sort of reassuring in a way. Wherever we're at in our practice, we can sort of use that as a bit of a map or a guide. So yeah, great.
Yeah.
So the first stage of the system of practice is integration. And one of the things that's associated with integration, which has got quite a lot of meanings, is mindfulness. Actually, that's been one of the ways for me into wanting to lead retreats on imagination. I've been a mindfulness teacher. I mean, I've been earning my living through 8-week courses when it was possible to do that. And it's very good work, largely because it helps people to become more grounded, more aware of their bodies, more aware of their thoughts, their feelings, and to step out of a kind of abstracted thinking mode into something that's much more healthy and helpful. And there is a but for me. I think there's more dimensions to the mind and there's more dimensions to consciousness than just being aware of our experience in the present moment. Or to put it another way, when we become aware of our experience in the present moment and we allow our mind to kind of open up by doing that, then other dimensions of experience arise. I mean, I've always been struck when I've run 8-week courses, and there's a point on the 8-week course where you have a day retreat or a morning retreat, and we lead a meditation on a mountain, and you feel your body is the mountain, you see the mountain, you see the blue sky, and it just opens up another dimension of experience. So in that case, by having an image, it's the image of a mountain. We experience the body, we experience the mind, but we do that in a very expansive way. And it's the only point on a mindfulness course where that comes in. But people are always really intrigued by that. So one of the groups of people I would like to bring on the retreat is past mindfulness students, because I think the imagination gives people something extra that's really quite important.
That threw up a question from me, actually, Vishwapani, which was, you put on events like these, or you teach at Buddhist centers and things, and it's self-evident to us why imagination is a really important aspect of any system of practice. In a way, the system of practice doesn't do it justice. I think you talk about it in your notes about the system being to do with all the great themes of spiritual life. And at that kind of scale, of course, the imagination's involved. But I suppose some people hearing this who are not familiar might think, I thought Buddhist meditation was all about stilling your body and quieting your mind and not being distracted and not going off on flights of fancy. Isn't that what imagination does? Because the first stage is integration. So what is it exactly you're kind of integrating in terms of imagination?
Okay, so the question is, how does imagination connect with that stage of integration? Well, one way in for me into that question has been the experience of practicing mindfulness of the body. And we do a lot of that. I mean, every approach to mindfulness focuses on that. But recognizing that the body that I experience from the inside isn't the body of anatomy. I think meditators come to be aware of that. We notice that there's things like energy centers, and there's a whole kind of world of the imagined body. In other words, the body that of experience. So consciousness makes a difference to the thing that we pay attention to. And I think that is starting to take us into the realm of, well, what is consciousness? And an image that I like that Sangharakshita has is that it's as if we're living in a small cave. Well, this is Plato's image, of course, but we're living in a small room, but there's a window that opens out to a much bigger room, a vast hall or something like that. We don't even know it's there. We don't know that our consciousness is capable of that great expansiveness. But sometimes something will take us into that bigger space. We'll find a way to be, or we'll find a way to explore our present moment experience that just opens up, and then more is possible. So that, I think, the faculty of being able to see that bigger space is the imagination. And the methods that we use include a creativity. So that's one of the things that I think Amitajyoti will be exploring. Amitajyoti, do you have any more thoughts about imagination and integration?
Well, I suppose if we come back to thinking of the mind, and that there is this map that we'll be exploring where the mind goes through these natural processes as it gradually deepens in awareness and we become more alive to our experience. The next stage of the practice from integration is positive emotional altruism, where we begin to feel that empathetic connection with the world around us. And I think it's on the basis of this where the imagination really starts to unfold. There's a contemporary artist who speaks of the imagination as resonance, which is that space between you or me and whatever it is we are contemplating or in relationship to. There's something that comes alive between ourselves and another person, or between ourselves and an image. There's this resonance, something that comes alive, which is a resonance, or you could say it's a kind of empathy. So this is where we enter into a sense of connection with not only ourselves, but the world around us. Here's a quote that I'd just like to share with you. This is Subhuti, actually, but it's inspired by Sangharakshita's thinking on the reimagining the Buddha. And he says that imaginative empathy is direct and immediate and may be completely intuitive without thought. One might also say instinctive. One simply resonates with the life in another person or animal, just as a vase on a mantelpiece resonates sympathetically with a particular note when it's played on the piano. So there's this sense of the imagination could be, in these early stages, it could be kind of regarded as a sense of aliveness or empathy or resonance with the world around us.
Great. So we've heard a bit there about the two first stages, as it were, so integration, positive emotion. I wonder if either of you would be willing to take us through the other stages. What do they mean in your own practice? Just sort of evoking them a little bit for people who may not be familiar, or saying how they matter, what they really mean to you.
I'll have a go at spiritual death, which is the third of these stages. So we've got integration, positive emotion, spiritual death, and then we're going to come on to spiritual rebirth. And there's a kind of a pattern there, that integration's about bringing things together. Positive emotion is starting to open things out. And Sangharakshita called this an organic process. So there's a pattern, there's a flow. There's a something about how consciousness or the mind works. But at some point, having in a way developed ourselves as an ethical person, as a loving person, there are things we have to let go of. And I suppose in Buddhist framework, we particularly talk about the things that create a fixed, narrow sense of self. And these are barriers, really, to that creative flow. So how do we do that? How do we have a sense of what it is that's limiting us? And there are lots of ways. I'm not sure really how we're going to approach this on the retreat. One of the practices that we do in the Triratna Buddhist order is the six elements practice, where we have a sense of earth, water, fire, and so on in ourselves, though all of those things being in a relationship with the world beyond us. I doubt we'll be doing this on the retreat, by the way, but just to give a sense of what spiritual death means, it's recognizing that there's nothing fixed that I can call I, me, or mine, that I can really hold on to. So imagining, and this is something that's quite distinctive to Sangharakshita's teaching about insight or spiritual death, is imagining ourselves into a space beyond the narrow confines of the ego is a way to let go of those confines. So that's what we do by contemplating the elements. We recognize that there's nothing we can hold on to, but we also see that they're present and they're flowing through us. So that, I think, leads on to the stage of spiritual rebirth. And I'll let Amitajyoti say something about this, but there's a line from the poet W.B. Yeats, which I quoted incessantly on the last retreat, and I'm sure I'll keep quoting it. He says, "The mind, freed from the pressure of the will, is unfolded in images." And that really resonates with me. And in fact, it seems to express a lot. Because the pressure of the will, I think we all know what that means and what it feels like. And there's something in that that relates to these things that hold us back, craving and aversion and so on. And when we can free ourselves from the pressure of the will, then the mind is able to unfold. And the images are important at that point because they give a form to that unfolding. So that's just an initial comment on imagination and spiritual rebirth. And I'm really interested to hear what Amitajyoti has to say over and above that.
Yeah, thanks, Vishvapani. So this process of spiritual death, as it were, we could also see it as a way of investigating or inquiring into the nature of what our experience is. So as this process unfolds, as we deepen in awareness, what we realize, as Vishvapani was saying, is that things become less fixed and our mind becomes more flexible, our mind becomes more open and receptive. So we can become more receptive to how things are, we're more receptive to the Dharma. And we realize, as Vishvapani was saying, that things become less fixed, our identities perhaps start to soften and release. So we're entering into a more free and expanded quality of awareness, really, which can feel uncomfortable as well. Even though it can be very pleasurable, it can also be a bit uncomfortable because it's like growing pains. You know, you're stepping into new territory, stepping out of what is familiar to us, what is habitual to us. And so this is also where we can loop back into kindness and loop back into body awareness. So we're moving between these different stages to help keep this process of integration going further and deeper into more satisfying states of being. On the basis of this, we can either bring images into our mind, into our awareness, and those images can nourish us, they can help us to open our mind, open our heart, connect more with the qualities that we want to connect with in life, like compassion or wisdom or energy. Or sometimes images come to us, they emerge, don't they? It's like the imagination has come to you, Vishvapani. It's almost as though that happens to each of us. Images can come, images that have resonance, and then they can become very interesting, they can become enriching, they can be like teachers or guides as well.
That was brilliant. And just following on that theme of images, I'm quite keen to explore imagery, how we can work with images in meditation and so on. So there are a number of images we'll be using, I hope, that are quite universal. And I think there's a tension, or there's a choice maybe, between looking at images that come from some tradition or other and allowing images to emerge in our own experience. But if you take the image of a flower, there's all of the connotations of growth. There's also a sense of completeness and a sense of beauty. And it's just a natural object, isn't it? We like looking at flowers. And those images are used in Buddhism. The lotus is an image of enlightenment. It's also the potential for enlightenment. And Buddhism is full of lotuses. At the same time, those same images are used in maybe slightly different ways in Western traditions, in poetry, in art, and so on, because they're universal. So we're going to be exploring those things. Now, that could be an academic project, couldn't it? You could write a PhD on the image of the lotus. But it's not that. What's more important is recognizing what that image might mean in our experience, what it might express of who we are or who we might be. I mean, that's the thing about the imagination. It's both those dimensions. So we're going to be looking at those images and seeing how they've been used in poetry, how they've been used in Buddhism, but all with the intention of enriching our practice, enriching our spiritual life, and not disappearing into some fantasy either.
Yeah, that's great, Vishwavani. I've got a quote here from Sangharakshita, which kind of mirrors what you were just saying there. He says, an image can mysteriously convey a sense of truth that the most convincing intellectual argument will never do. He says, abstract ideas may please the mind, but it is myth and symbol that satisfy the heart.
Yes. Once we move away from a very secularized version of these traditions, of these practices, like we have, for example, in the mindfulness movement, and into a Buddhist frame or into any traditional frame, we do find ourselves engaging with this world of images, symbols, myths. And there's a reason for that. It's not just because they're something of the past and the way that traditional people used to think. It's exactly what Sangharakshita says in that quote. They allow us to experience something that we can't experience in a more literal way or in a more conceptual way.
Sort of reminding me of what Amita Jyoti mentioned earlier about that sense of resonance. We resonate with an image. It's like we don't always quite know why, but we know we're moved. We know there's a sort of heart response or some sort of movement towards or resonance in our own kind of being with an image.
And it's really helpful to notice that and to start to distinguish different kinds of resonance where, you know, because we're bombarded by images, we're bombarded by films and television programs and all of that, but recognizing when there's a resonance that actually speaks to something deeper in us. I think that's the realm of imagination as a faculty that is really helpful to explore and to find the things that move us, to find things that are very personal and maybe quite eccentric. Maybe no one else likes them. And we want to allow space for all of that on the retreat, for people to explore. And that's what Amita Jyoti is so brilliant at doing, I think.
It occurred to me when you were talking earlier about spiritual death, Vishwapani, I immediately started thinking, well, what next? You know, when you let go of the self and all those kinds of conceptual ideas of I'm going to let go, what next? And images is where my own mind goes to. I think, well, actually, if I think about spiritual rebirth or spiritual receptivity, I don't really think about it in terms of ideas. I think about it in terms of images. I guess that's why the Buddhist tradition provides so many beautiful archetypal images that we can just turn towards and see how we respond. I know that on the retreat itself, I mean, we've done a lot about imagination as the backdrop and the system of practice as the backdrop. On the retreat, images aren't just going to be ideas. We're going to concretely engage with images. And Amita Jyoti, I know that there's a practical side to that in terms of encouraging people to explore drawing and painting. We're not going to be assessing the quality of people's artwork on the retreat. You won't be critiqued. Can you say more about how you want to use the making of images when we're answering our own sense of what next for me? Who am I now? Who do I want to be? Why is it important for us to make images and to explore in that way?
Well, I suppose what Vishwapani and I are going to be doing, we're going to be exploring a range of practices to support people to access the imagination, to sustain their connection with it. So a certain dialogue with the imagination can start to unfold. This can guide us into new, fresh insights on our experience or on the world. It can introduce us to new ways of being, and it can just be very, very enriching as well for our lives. There will be a focus during the retreat on deepening awareness, and we'll be doing this through meditation, mindfulness in daily life. We'll also be having, probably daily, won't it, Vishwapani, probably daily drawing period. And this is absolutely for all levels of experience. You don't have to be able to draw even. It's more like moving the hand with a pencil or some coloured materials, moving the hand. I'll guide you through various practices in a process of discovering images that are meaningful to you through that. Sometimes we'll be working with nature, with actual images that Vishwapani and I will introduce you to. So we'll actually explore those specific images. And other times there'll be guided practices for participants to enter into a process of discovery. And I think that the key thing is that this is very much about accessing the imagination for all the reasons we've just described, rather than it being about art or being good at it. And we'll have more meditative evenings where we will engage with images that evoke and celebrate some of the qualities of awakening, or some of the qualities of the awakening heart, which is symbolized through a variety of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas.
It's great to hear about the structure of the day, Amita Jyoti. I suppose the thing is, images, they're just going to wash through all of it, aren't they? It's not like you're only going to think about images in the afternoon. It's like your meditation practice is there, your reflection practice is there, opening the heart and opening the throat and taking part in ritual. I remember this a lot from last time around. It really built up a momentum, didn't it, Vishwapani? Again, you're all in. This is like full body practice, full heart practice for a week.
Yeah, I think it's recognizing actually the imagination does tie together things like chanting mantras, for example. I mean, what is a mantra in the Buddhist tradition? I mean, some people might not know, but it's a sound, a set of syllables that you chant, you say it again and again. And actually, well, they sort of have a meaning, but really, they're just things that you allow to resonate. They're connected with these Buddha or Bodhisattva figures. So that's one resonance. And when you chant a mantra, you can enter into, well, how do you call it? I don't know, a more imaginal space. I think a lot of these elements of Buddhist practice do naturally come together in terms of where they take us. They can open up a different way of being. And I think that really goes well with the idea of a home retreat. I really hope that people who come on the retreat will give themselves the space to allow the things to work and find themselves in a different state of mind. I've had periods, I don't know, sometimes gone on a retreat or just something's happened. I found myself writing all sorts of stuff and being very creative. And then other times, you know, nothing. And it's quite mysterious, or at least it seems mysterious. In fact, I think it's about having the conditions. So that's really what we're going to try and do, create the conditions for this more open, expansive, creative space to arise.
So before we leave the realm of art specifically, Vishwapani, you sort of did yourself down a bit earlier at the start when you were saying, I'm the theory guy and Amita Jyoti's going to turn up with the creative art stuff. A big part of last time round was that you read poetry all the way through this event. In fact, you provided some really great recordings of poetry up front, which we'll probably do again this time for the dedicated webpage. But it was a big part of it, and people really loved the fact that they got to hear your voice, maybe in a way they don't usually hear you, and your readings of poetry being woven into the meditations and the reflections and the teachings. They kind of helped set the scene for something. I'm glad you mentioned mantras, because that's what made me think of poetry there. It's a bit closer to magic spells than it is to actually direct sense. What is it about reading poetry? Because this is something people do whenever they need to find meaning. They find themselves writing poetry. What do I do to process the death of a famous person? I write a poem. What do I do? You know, when I land on retreat, I write a poem. What is it about poetry that you think ties into this as a practice, reading poetry, listening to poetry?
I love reading poetry myself, and I've always read poetry. I occasionally write bits of it, but I'm more of a reader. And I think for me, a poem is a world that you enter, and the language resonates with feeling. It gives you a way to hold a thought that isn't about a concept. It uses imagery and it uses all the capacities of language to have all sorts of kinds of resonance, such that you can enter into an experience that really you can't do through a more prosaic kind of language. You can do it through music, and you can do it through all the other art forms, visual arts and so on. But poetry is kind of quintessentially about evoking, I don't know, I'm starting to run out of words, aren't I? Because
there's
it's
a vibe,
quite hard
isn't
to
there?
Define poetry, but it is about what it evokes, how it resonates, what the images allow you to see in non-conceptual ways.
Yeah, and it's the same with the artwork that Amita Jyoti, you were saying. It's like, it doesn't really matter whether you think you're good at drawing or whether you're a bit shy of poetry and think it's not for you or something. You might be surprised if you enter these kind of spaces on retreat. They are quite safe spaces, I think, for experiment, and you get to put down the version of yourself and just tinker with being somebody else for a week. And
yeah,
you can be led into that by you reading some poems of Shivpani or by taking part in your exercises, Amita Jyoti.
Well, I do think that we have this incredible resource, which is Western culture and also global culture, Buddhist culture. You know, these incredible things called poems or great works of art. And most of us don't know them. They're not accessible to us. So actually, that's one of the things I want to do, is just to really create a space where we can hear these words or see these images. And maybe there'll be some music, I don't know. But to really be able to dwell in the space that they open up for us, which is very naturally connected to spiritual life, I think.
When we're exploring drawing, painting, images, we'll also look at some drawings, paintings from the history of art as well. They can really enrich us and open our mind and resonate with us and help, again, to guide us into more of a sense of who we are, actually. They can become mirrors to a deeper sense of self, a deeper sense of ourselves. The whole process of the imagination can be very deeply transformative, because we can enter into new ways of relating to our experience and freeing our heart and mind in ways that we wouldn't have expected.
Yeah, last week we had a writing workshop on the Buddhist Center Online with Yasha Bodhi, who does a lot of work looking at paintings mindfully. And there was a brilliant bit where she was getting the whole group, maybe like 50 people or something, to look at this really obscure Dutch painting. And I confess, when she put it up on screen, I was like, oh, well, let's see how this goes. But, you know, hearing everybody's responses to it was amazing. The color of the roses that are in just one corner of the frame, or the concentration on the face of the man who's pruning them. The stance of the two ladies at the back who are giggling. Are they giggling? Maybe they're talking. Maybe they're whispering. And you just got this whole world coming out. And it was amazing to watch happen in real time. And it's hard to do that any other way than just to take the risk of coming together and see what emerges out of the space, isn't it? It's like a really shared practice.
Well, and also I imagine Yasha Bodhi is a skilled guide to help those
exactly.
people on that
yeah,
call
very...
to see what's there, rather than what happens when we wander around galleries with our legs feeling heavier and heavier, and Dutch 17th century art becomes this grey blur.
So I'm going to continue in this direction, but just slightly different. So we've been speaking about the arts and poetry and the imagination in that realm. But I know that another realm that was really important for both of you to include in the retreat is an awareness of nature and the presence of nature as sort of quite a primary theme. Obviously, it's clear that that can relate to embodiment and perhaps mindfulness, and nature can sort of support us in that. But I wonder if each of you could say a bit more about the role of nature in practice, and also how we'll actually connect with nature on this retreat.
I live in a city, and so in some respects, my contact with nature is fairly limited, but there is nature around. You know, there are trees, there are plants, there is this enrichment all around. So even if those of you who will participate are in a similar circumstance, then you'll still be able to relate to what we're going to be exploring. It's just a huge resource. Like the arts, it's a huge resource to open the mind and to connect to dimensions of ourselves that are more enriching. And the natural world can guide us into that. So we will be drawing with the natural world. We will be looking at images related to the natural world, and we'll be encouraging you to spend time with nature as well, in order to, again, maybe to cultivate this sense of empathy, allow this resonance, this sense of aliveness, so we can feel ourselves in participation with life and the world around us.
I was just enjoying, Amita Jyoti, as you're speaking, you've got a couple of plants there in the background, which are really beautiful, and this little burst of green aliveness. And as you say, in the city, it can sometimes be difficult to feel like we're part of nature. But actually, my experience of being on retreat is that we can see nature in more and more spaces, you know, growing up between the cracks on the pavement or, you know. So yeah, it sounds really beautiful to connect with it wherever we are.
I don't think there's any kind of authentic Buddhist, Dharma, spiritual practice that isn't really in some way about feeling our own aliveness and something that's quite natural, a feeling of who we really are that is also of the nature of growth, that wants to grow and develop. Often, I think when we don't have access to nature, we focus on our bodies, and that's really important in a world where a lot of our experience is mediated through screens and that sort of thing. So we need to come back to the body. And of course, our body is part of nature. But when we have the capacity to experience our bodies in a wider natural environment, it feels like that's where we should be, that that's how we're built, that that's what life ought to be like. And actually everything unfolds out of that. And I don't really know the explanation is, it just seems such a natural, universal, instinctive experience.
Yeah, I guess it makes me think what Kusala Devi said there about houseplants in the background. Mm. Amita Jyoti, like we surround ourselves with green whenever we can, many of us. And I was just remembering as you were talking and evoking being in the city, how much I loved city parks as a kid. Sometimes really daggy city parks, not like Hyde Park or Regent's Park, like, you know, small metropolitan city parks are run by the local council. And
daggy.
Daggy, really daggy.
Daggy in Glaswegian.
You can imagine slightly grey grass, you know, slightly sad borders and not many flowers. But still, as a kid, I could get lost in those spaces. And I guess as an adult, quite often we do in the summertime here in the US, we do our Sunday meditation classes in the local park, which is, again, not very big. And as soon as you get people to stand on the grass or sit on the grass and meditate, you don't really have to explain what mindfulness is. It's just like it's right there. And it's almost like an animal yes. sense. They know what it is. I know you've talked a little bit in some of the notes that you sent us about animism, the idea that the whole world is alive. And in a way, everything is in play when it comes to just considering your place in things. And I'm guessing that that vibe, again, I hate to keep using that word, but that's something that you're going for through this whole retreat. You want to evoke a practice that's alive. It's not an academic exercise. You're not interested in just getting people to think a bit. You're living something together, and nature is the best way to anchor that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe that takes us into one of the other key areas, which is meditation, just to bring it back to good old-fashioned Buddhism, in case anybody's worried that we've got way out there into painting and drawing and poetry, and now we've all got our shoes off on the grass. We're going to be at home, and we are going to be meditating together as well as part of this. I was interviewing, or actually having a conversation with Kamala Sheela, a friend of mine, and we ended up talking a bit about how essential an attitude of playfulness and spaciousness and exploration is in taking meditation practice deeper. He was actually quite strong about it, saying there is no authentic way to take meditation deeper if it's not infused by that sense of playfulness and curiosity. It just doesn't work in a certain way. So on this retreat, what sorts of meditation will we be engaging with? And presumably, again, it's part of this kind of mandala of practices and mandala of awarenesses that we're bringing in, the practical artwork, the reflective time, the teaching, the sharing of poetry and inspiration, all of that.
Well, we're still talking about that. I do quite a lot of teaching outside Tri Ratna, and I do like to use visual images. And I think about what every teacher in a school these days is told, that there are different kinds of learners. There are auditory, kinesthetic, and visual learners. And a lot of the mindfulness practices are about our kinesthetic experience, you know, experiencing things through the felt sense of the body. And I think it's really helpful to explore the visual sense along with that. I mean, maybe the auditory as well, but certainly meditation is quite suited to the visual sense. We need to be careful not to disappear into some kind of fantasy or spiritual bypassing. So I'm interested in how those images can be related to the bodily experience and also related to our experience of things like metta or loving kindness. Keeping images quite simple. So again, they become things that we can rest our attention on, bring our mind back to. So that's certainly one of the things that I would like to be doing. Exploring images like the tree, the sun maybe, the blue sky, the lotus, we'll see. But also the other part of that, I suppose, is having space for images to emerge. I know that Amitah Jyoti is very keen on that, and that's the other dimension of images, seeing what comes out. Maybe that relates to what Kamala Shila was saying about playfulness.
We're both breathworks mindfulness teachers, been trained for many, many years. So we will be linking in core mindfulness themes that would be familiar to mindfulness practitioners. We'll be looking at working with the breath and how the breath can stabilize the mind. That can help with integration. We'll be looking at connection meditations in all likelihood. I think Vishvapani sort of core, isn't it, for us really. So ways to connect with kindness to ourselves and the world around us, and keep us really with this healthy, happy sense of embodiment as well. And, you know, when challenges arise, because the nature of our mind, the nature of our experiences, we can get challenging experiences around discomfort, pain, memories from the past. So we'll be creating a really holding space for those to be addressed as well, and for those to be included and worked with and worked through these different stages of practice.
I've been thinking as we've been talking that actually quite a lot of people listening to the podcast won't be coming on the retreat. And I think in what we're saying, maybe there's a bit more than just a pilot for the retreat. There is something in this connection between mindfulness and imagination that I think is helpful for anyone who wants to practice meditation, who's interested in practicing Buddhism. And I think it's really interesting to explore, you know, what it means to be grounded, what it means to be present, means to be aware of our feelings. And we notice all the craziness that goes on around that. And then also what it is that feels open and feels creative, and what happens if we bring that awareness that I think naturally comes as we start a practice in relation to things like being in nature. Or looking at something beautiful. It might just be a flower. It might be the sky. It might be a person who you find really beautiful. And I think all of those explorations give a kind of richness to our practice while also keeping it quite real and present and aware.
Yeah, that's what was striking me actually throughout this conversation, is just this real sense of what does it mean to be a human in its sort of fullness and richness, and all of the things that can support that, all the practices, everything that's around us that can support that. And then what does it mean to grow as well? So those images of growth or creativity and expression. So yeah, thank you. It sounds really wonderful retreat.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this retreat now. And as you say, Vishvapani, actually, this whole area, it's not really just about this particular event. It's like a whole way of practicing that is just, I suppose, an emergent aspect of the particular community we're in, the Tri Ratna Buddhist community, and the kind of new ways of engaging with practice that are emerging. That was also very much on Kamala Shila's mind when he was talking about it, was how much confidence he had in the new generation of meditation mindfulness teachers and the way they are embodying and capturing the Buddhist path. I hope anyone who's listened to this conversation today feels inspired by it to go deep in their own life. And yeah, if you can join us in September, that would be absolutely amazing to have you with us. 13th to the 19th, we'll have all the links in the show notes. I suppose it just remains to thank you both. Well, for being willing to show up and talk about this, but also just so generous in offering the retreat itself. It's not something we take for granted that people will decide to give up a week of their life to do this. In a way, it's amazing. So thank you both.
That's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to chat. It's got me thinking now.
Yes, well, all the richness will pour into the materials we'll provide up front for this retreat in the next months. In the meantime, I'd like to thank you too, Kusala Devi, for helping hold the space today.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. Been very glad to be here. Thanks.
And thanks for listening, as usual. There are a billion squillion podcasts out there. So if you like this, tell your friends, tell the people you practice with or the people you think might be interested. Maybe there's someone you know who might really benefit from spending a week with Amitajyoti and Vishvapani, just taking themselves seriously, but not too seriously when it comes to the beautiful, rich variety of their life. We'll be back with some more episodes of the podcast soon. In the meantime, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time.